League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to Dion's Gaffer Tapes with me, Dion Dublin, the podcast series that gets the real stories from the people that know, the people that pull the strings inside the great footballing clubs of ours, the Gaffers. Every week we welcome a different guest into the studio, and this week I'm delighted to welcome my old Millwall captain, Mr. Sean Dyche. So Dyche, let's start at the very beginning. I had no idea when I was playing with you at Millwall, you were my captain, you were shouting, spluttering, screaming, wanting the boys to play the way that you want them to play, that you were going to be a manager. Where did it come from? Did you always know?
No, I think, to be fair, in them days, before you came in, I was always interested in the coaching side and the management side of things. Probably the turnaround for me was when I worked under John Duncan at Chesterfield. You know that weird thing where we had a group of what I would call all rightness, and we had real good successes. We got promoted. We got to the FA Cup semi-final, you know, an historic sort of moment for the club. And that group disbanded for quite a lot of money. And I started thinking, well, hang on a minute, that was a collective group mentality. And he'd got the best out of it, him and a coach called Kevin Randall. And I remember that was the first time I really started thinking more about not just my role, about the team's role and the tactics and, you know, the way it worked. So I started getting involved with the coaching scene, went to Millwall, took my coaching license at Millwall before you came there. And then I'd already got what was then called the B license. So by the time you come along, I was a bit older, I'd taken that, and I was working with really good staff there, if you remember, with Mark McGee and Steve Gritt, you know, as a top coach, and the late Ray Harford, and quite what I think top youngsters. And there was a few of us older guys, and including yourself when you came in, to sort of hold it all together. So, you know, by then I was like the glue that was trying to hold the youngsters together, including yourself and Stuart Nevercott and a handful of us, really. You know, and I think you learn a lot from them periods. So I was already somewhat thinking at least of coaching, not necessarily managing. Against popular belief, my pathway into management, doors opened in front of me. I wasn't pushing them open. I was really enjoying coaching the youth team and learning, you know, really learning about yourself.
Yeah, of course.
How to project onto others for two. And to listen more than you talk, you know, because when you were dealing with youngsters, you do forget sometimes they're impressionable. They do have, they daredn't say things, and they want to. And I was quite open with that. I learned to be more open than certainly my generation had, you know, as you know, when we were apprentices, scholars, as you call now, you were told what to do, and you did. Whereas, you know, I was trying to be a bit more approachable, more open to what their needs were, and trying to guide them in the right direction. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I really did.
So I know you as Dyche. You've not changed one iota since I've known you, since I was at Millwall with you. What is the difference between being a pro footballer and being a professional manager? Is it just huge? Is it just night and day?
Yeah, massive. It's the only way I can describe it is when you cross over, right, you've got all these ideas and thoughts. And don't forget, I'd been with the youth team for 2 years. I've been development coach under Brendan Rodgers for sort of 6 months. I was assistant manager under Malky Mackay and learned a lot from Malky, proper, you know, good guy, good operator. And then I took over myself and my own staff. And even with that background, you know, you cross over and you think, yeah, I've got this down. I'm going to do this and do that. And then one day you think you're, you know, impervious to a defeat. So you think we're going to win every game. And then you have your pre-season like I did at Watford, and we were absolutely awful. And you think, my goodness, we've got a lot more work to do than I thought. You're 13 games in and you've lost seven, and they're wearing Dyche Out T-shirts on their chest. And then you think, right, okay, we need to reel this in, and suddenly all the magic has gone. That's the difference right there.
Oh, my God.
Come on, big ginger egg, but you try and tell us what we're meant. Because we don't think you've got a Scooby. And then you think, right, I've got to somehow convince these lot that we are all pointing in the right direction. We do not. And, you know, you learn on the ropes, you know, you learn from the feedback from the players, you learn quickly how important your staff are, you learn quickly how important your temperament for the job is and your understanding of the realities, not the perception of it. And then you've still got to do your bit. You've still got to go and answer the media questions when you're, you know, having a tough time. And I had plenty of them in my time. And I just think you form this new you. It's still you, but it's a new you. You've got to be more aware, more self-aware, more open-minded for all the different roles of all these different people. Whereas when you're a player, let's face it, first things first, you're looking after yourself. I was a team player, as you know, and I'm sure I know you were, in fact. So very quickly you evolve in a team, but deep down, number one, look after myself, and then the team comes. As a manager, you've got to look after everyone else and then look at yourself. And that can be really difficult.
So with that said then, Daichi, what do you put Burnley's form down to? Because you've got a very similar squad, albeit a very small squad. What's happened for your form to fall away, do you think?
Well, we finished after lockdown. We came back. We had an amazing run of form considering the challenges we've had. So we come through that and we thought, right, that's going to be really difficult to maintain that level of form. I think we're like the top four of the division for them 9 games. With the injuries we had. So you go away and obviously it was a very short break of about 3 and a bit weeks. We come back and we were amazed to find out that some of the injuries weren't either better or had got re-injured. So that was a bad start. And then you've got to still work with the team that you've got. And all of a sudden, your team consists of a lot of kids. And not that they're, by the way, they're good players, but it's a bit early for them to be walking out in Premier League world, you know, without any experience. Some of them had never even played a game on loan even. And they were in amongst us. So that became your hardcore group.
Is that right, Dodge? Is that right? You had players that you had to throw in that had no experience of Premier League football?
Yeah. I mean, they hadn't even been on loan, let alone in the Premier League. So that's a challenge. But I've always said that when, someone's injured, it gives someone another opportunity. So they've got some invaluable experience on that. But it does make it more difficult to get results, quite obviously. A bit of form as well, a lot of games. And, we went through the first few rounds of the Cup. I know people question the Cup, the miles, the ins and outs of it. But sometimes when you've got very few players, that can be a hindrance rather than something that's helpful. And you come out of it. And as you know, the Premier League, it bypasses you quickly. And all of a sudden you are where you are. You look around and you think, well, we probably deserved a bit more out of that run, but we didn't get it. And then you think, well, that's life here, So there's a few realities, but equally, they are realities. I don't really like I can talk to you about it because I've known you a long time, but it's hard when you do the media because they're almost, oh, you're making excuses. You go, well, no, they're facts. These are facts. In balance to that, we're just about coming back to what I think we can be somewhat. We've still got more to go. Our strikers haven't scored as many as they historically have done at this stage. We've let in a few soft goals, which have cost us. The balance is getting better. The fitness of the players is getting better. True fitness, I mean, not just getting fit. You've got to be truly fit to perform. And that's coming back. So do I expect more going forward? Yes, I do. Is there a guarantee of that? No, there's not. There's no guarantees in this game. You know that. It's, people who tell you we're going to play this way and that way. All the best with that, by the way. I tell you now, that's my biggest bit of advice to newbie managers. I said, just be careful with the messages you're going to tell the world that we're going to play the right way. Say, just be careful because you ain't got a result in 10 games. You'll be playing whatever way you need to play. Don't worry about that. You're playing any other way than the one that's going to get your result. That is a fact. So I said, just be careful. Exactly. Just be careful. Send the messages out a bit too early. Win first, succeed a little bit, then send the messages out. That's my. But joking apart, you know what I'm getting at. It's just that my brand becomes from trying to win football matches, and that we can all argue all the bits and bobs in between football, but trying to win, trying to be successful. And if I can allow the players to do that, it's one of them weird things that you know about football. People go, oh, you don't do this and you don't do that. Well, we keep selling these players, for tens of millions of pounds, and we buy them for peanuts. And I go, well, we must be doing something pretty good because how are other people coming to buy our players then? If they're all not good enough or they're all to be playing the wrong way, how come teams keep coming and trying to buy them? So then you go, well, one's doing something right, and we stay in the Premier League. So it's a really tricky situation. But the one thing I know, I've always tried to be pragmatic in a positive sense, work with what we've got and find a way of being successful. And the difference is now to when we played, that was a good start point. And fans wanted success. And let's face it, Dion, you know yourself, I'm definitely not going to name managers or teams, but there's ways of playing for some teams when you're sitting there going, I cannot believe they consistently try and do this when they keep getting every week. No. And you just go, that can't be good management or coaching for me. That just can't be.
No. Agreed. What kind of player do you think you'd have been to manage?
I think easy. When I look back, I think underneath my moany personality about things I didn't like, I think people respected the fact that I'd always work, I'd always train hard, I was very professional, I was always lean and fit and game. I'd like to think that was the overriding thing. And some managers felt, maybe I was a better footballer than people gave me credit for, the manager who worked with me for a long time, you know, and things like that. But mainly, I think underneath all, I think I would be one who you'd put on your team sheet. That's what I would say. You know, if I'm fit, then I'm probably going to get on your team sheet, which I did for most of my career. Whether I was good, bad or indifferent, most managers found a way of thinking, we need someone like him in the team. And that's good enough for me. If a manager's going to put me on the team sheet, I'd take that every day of the week.
As a manager now, what advice would you give Sean Dyche as a 17-year-old? Wow. Now you're a manager and you've done it.
I think the challenge is, before I answer, is that the modern stuff we know now wasn't there then. You know, win or lose, have a booze and... You know, you didn't really know too much about diet. You know about working hard, don't get me wrong, that was a given. You know, you had to be fit, you had to work hard, but you didn't really know about diet and all that. So if I took the knowledge now to then, that would be one thing. I'm saying drink less, eat better food, look after yourself more, sleep more, and all these sensible things, but they weren't there then. So it's not fair to apply it. So I think more like then, I think try and absorb around you from other players. I don't think I was always good at watching games and analysing. And I think that's an amazing part of the academy now. They teach kids how to analyse. I don't think I analysed. I think I just sort of got on with it. Maybe understand the bigger picture of the game. If someone, you know, I always thought if a coach would have, then it was just scream at you. You know, they'd shout at you, get turned, say at Forest. And you thought, I don't even know why I'm getting turned. If someone just tells me, one of my favourite stories, me and Stoney share this, and Boney and Tony Loughlin. So Archie Gemmell was our youth team coach, and he was a top fella, top pro, and very demanding, but when I look back, in a good way, in a healthy way. And he used to scream this in our face right now and again, if you weren't doing so well, he'd say, I'm not going to use the second word on your podcast. He used to say, get a kick or off. And he'd scream at you. And for years, we thought, I don't even know what he means. What does get a kick or off mean? We were like, well, it must mean try a bit harder, run a bit more, try and get the ball, you know, pass it. We were like, we were confusing. Oh, it's still not, but we sort of knew what it meant. We were sort of like, so now and again, we just shouted at each other across the training ground, you know what I mean? Get a kick or off. We just scream it across the training ground, being stony and that, you know, just wetting ourselves laughing. And everyone's looking at us like we're mad, you know. So I think get someone around me who could probably give me a bit more information in a more structured sort of fashion.
Yeah.
I'm more of a visual learner. So this era would be brilliant for me because nowadays they sit you down and show you clips of the game and where you should be. I think I was good at that side. But when people tell you stuff, I couldn't always picture it as clearly. So I think that would be a note to self then, is just hope that someone came around me and went, listen, picture this, do that and do this. You know what I mean? So that would have been very helpful. Other than that, like I said, common sense stuff, diet, looking after yourself and all the things that you do now.
Absolutely. And with me knowing you so well, I know the answer to this, but the people listening don't. How do you deal with different characters? You've done it as a captain. I've seen it as a captain. You know, you've got some quiet characters in the dressing room, I would imagine. Some buoyant ones, loud ones, some that are not too sure, asking questions all the time. Is that a difficult skill as a manager?
Yeah, I think you have to have a generic way of dealing with the mass group. Usually for me, that's honesty, authenticity, a bit of humour, being straightforward and being forthright. So that'd be my general rule across the group. Individually, you know yourself, I never embarrass players. I never, ever call a player a name. Never, ever. That's my number one rule. I've never called a player a name, as in a derogatory individual personal name. Never.
As in like in a team talk kind of thing?
Yeah,
like
never do that. Never do that. Half time, after game, never. I've never done it and I won't do it.
And your reason for not doing that?
I didn't want it when I was a player. And I've been called a few names and I thought, why are you calling me a name? I'm not that. I'm not that name you just called me. Call me anything, but don't call me that. So I remember as a player thinking, that's no use to me whatsoever. Give me some direction and tell me what I should be doing. But don't just scream at me a name that is factually not true. So I never enjoyed that. So I thought, right, note to self, that will never happen. So that's my number one rule. I'll put demands on players, though. I mean, I will put demands and ask a lot of them. That's a different ballgame, but always think in the right manner. And then you have your individual version of that. So never embarrass players. That'd be my second one. I attempt not to embarrass players. If I've got anything to say that would be, I'd pull them in private or on the side of the pitch or speak to me that way. Horse whispering's a good one. You know, some people, the smallest bit of information just privately on the edge of a 5v5 or a 10v10, you know, just pull someone aside and go, listen, different class, you keep doing what you're doing. And sometimes it can be a simple horse whispering moment. Sometimes it has to be get them in, show them some clips, you know, different styles of learning. I mean, we do psych profiles on the players more for their learning styles. Five learning, visual, audio, kinesthetic, written, discussion. They're the five main learning styles. So which one are you? We work that out and then we work with them on that. So, you know, there is a bit of method in there, Dion. Not a lot, by the way. Not a lot.
It's amazing. I find it quite amazing. I find it quite amazing because I know Sean Dyche's the player, and I find it quite amazing now hearing you speak like this, where I haven't heard you speak like this before.
Yeah, that doesn't mean I wasn't thinking it, though. You know, if there was a lot of individuals from that. I mean, Stephen Reid, you know, really is a big, big mate of mine still. Neil Harris and these guys, you know, I still speak to them, and they remember things when they go, oh, I remember you pulling me and telling me that and telling me this. So I was thinking it, but I don't know, in the dressing room, you don't display it, or you're in that world of camaraderie, banter, and now and again you pull someone, get them an headlock on a night out and say, listen, this is what you need to do. You know, you share some of these thoughts, you know what I mean? So
brilliant. It's proper old school, that is. How would you describe your management style? How do you think people from the outside see Sean Dyche? What kind of manager is he?
I think honest, forthright, trusting, demanding, hopefully, compassionate as well. I think I can show a bit of empathy and a bit of understanding to life around football, not just on the pitch, you know, to their lives as professionals. Certainly demanding, you know, I do demand. I think I demand of myself as well, though. You know, I don't demand anything of them that I wouldn't expect from myself. But equally, all of that mixed in the pot with a bit of humour. I do like a bit of humour. I like to share a bit of humour. I like gallows humour. I like humour under fire. You know, when it's coming on top a little bit, I still find a chance to have a smile with the players. I think that's an important part. I've never lost sight of the camaraderie, the belief in a team unit. And that is often glued together with a bit of, you know, fun in awkward circumstances, I've found, you know, when you can laugh at yourself and you can laugh at others. I think I try and glue it together with a bit of humour, not just me, but my staff as well. But I'm always honest with players. Soft honesty, hard honesty, brutal honesty, it will always be the truth, because I just don't fathom that out. If you're going to lie to a player, trust me, the next week you're going to have to tell him more lies on top of the lies that you told him the last week. I'm not bright. I'm not bright enough to start lying all the time, you know what I mean?
If you were to give some advice to a young, up-and-coming 33, 34-year-old coming to the end of their career and they want to go into coaching and management, what things would you say, listen, make sure you do or make sure you do?
I'd probably reflect on your career. Let's imagine a player, right? Because not all coaches and managers are coming out of a player career. But let's imagine a player who's been through a career, 10-year career at least, say. So I'd say reflect on what you learn. Possibly either make mental notes or physical notes about what you learned and the things that you thought were really important. Mm-hmm. Place alongside that the things that you added to that. So they're the factual things that you've learned. These are the things your personal view of that moment was. So sort of, you know, get your reflection of it. Find that as a base. In my opinion, do the courses. I think you should do the courses. There used to be a debate about, oh, you shouldn't, you know, ex-players shouldn't have to do the courses, that being your coaching licenses and the LMA diploma. I personally am a fan of them. I do them as quickly as you can, hopefully during your career, not after it. And the other thing, don't be in a rush to think you're going to manage straight away. I mean, I know players, people ring me and go, I've got this chance to be a manager. And they ask my opinion. I go, I stick in an academy, go to an academy, earn your spurs. Learn about yourself, not just the players. Learn about yourself. Learn about how you talk in front of people, your tonality. So tonality is a big one with me because I've got this gruff voice that people talk about. It sounds very negative. So I have to use 8 positives to 2 negatives to make people realise I'm being positive. Because if not, they'll think, they'll adjust to my tone as being aggressive or a bit, you know, kind of, not downbeat, but a bit aggressive and a bit sort of negative. So I've had to learn about my tone. I've had to learn about the information. I've had to learn about, you know, you giving them information they can understand, not what you can understand. So all these things, and I think when you're practicing that in academies, you can practice it because guess what? They don't know your knowledge. So if you're a 14-year-old, you haven't got my knowledge. So I can share thoughts with you and see how you respond. I can look at you and see how you respond. I can put a coaching session on, and it doesn't have to work every time because when you're 14, you don't know any different. It's not like you, you know, first in place, as you know, they'll let you know when it's not working. Don't worry about that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So yes. I just always say, earn your spurs. Earn the right to be a manager. Don't think it's just bang, here I am, I'm off and running. That's my opinion anyway.
So 10 years, you've got 10 years worth of experience now. You would have had some players that have been difficult in the dressing room and players that have been bad eggs, as we would have said back in the day, bad egg, get him out. How do you deal with them? Do you just pull them into the office and have a chat with them? Because it's one of those where I've thought to myself, I wonder how. Mesut Ozil at Arsenal. I don't know if he's a bad egg. I don't know the man at all. But he's coming across from what you see as somebody that doesn't want to work hard to get him out.
Well, I'm not going to go on to Mesut Ozil. I don't think that's fair. But to give you a view of how I work, it'd be talk and talk again. So I'd always talk to players. and explain, obviously, and take feedback, by the way. Because things with feedback, you know, people go on about, yeah, if you listen to their feedback, be ready, by the way, because don't always expect the feedback you think is going to come. So if you're going to ask for feedback, you've got to be man enough to take it, or person enough, sorry, can't say man enough anymore, person enough to take that. You know, you've got to take that information.
Yeah.
Make sense of it, you know, use it wisely. If then they still not are adjusting to what you want, I usually talk to them again. And then if they're still not, I'll start to demand from them. And if they're still not, I'll start dragging them and I'll force them. And then if they're still not, they have to go. Simple as that. So it takes time for that to occur. And you've only got so much time. Sometimes, of course, we both know this, there's something that hits you straight away and you think, I've got to activate really quickly here. And that can be the trickiest one, because nowadays people are sitting on contracts and big contracts and it's not so easy. People say, well, why don't you just, you know, say, I'll favor, why aren't you getting more out of them? And you go, well, because they don't want more out of themselves, let alone me wanting more out of them.
Yeah,
you've got
exactly.
to take ownership of your career. I can talk to you about your ownership of your career, but unless you want to grip it and take it, I'm probably never going to get the best out of you. So we share that view. Look, I'm here for you. All of my staff are here for you. We'll do everything we can. And then if they don't buy into that, eventually somewhere down that, you know, that period, they've got to go. Because if they're not going to align, they're only going to sap the energy out of everyone else around them. But I always talk to people. I always give them a chance to align, and probably more than one chance. You know, and I've worked with players. I can't go into all the, you know, personal problems and people with a lot of problems in their personal lives.
Course,
I've helped and tried to help straighten that out and help them do that in order to get them going. Sometimes it doesn't work, you know, and you try as many different times as you can and try as many different ways. Like I say, 5 learning styles, which is their key one. Can I zone in on that? Kind of get their key drivers, because everyone presumes it's money. Not everyone, it's not money for everyone. It's the most instinctual thing that people presume, but it's not. I work with them as many ways as I can. I don't believe in lost players. I don't believe in ones that truly are this. There's something in there that made them up in the first place, and I try and tap into that.
Yes.
But if they've lost that moment, then I'm probably not going to be able to find it. So therefore, shake hands. And
absolutely, yeah.
Time to go.
I suppose you're very much a tiered system, is it, where you chat, then you chat. And the chatting has to stop at some stage, I suppose. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, and don't forget, you've got staff around you as well. Inevitably, it comes to you, but the staff around you as well. So sometimes I send a staff member I think might have a better rapport. I'm not arrogant enough to think my skill set is every person I meet thinks I'm brilliant, because they don't, by the way. So therefore, they might really like one of my staff members or get on with them or align with them. So I think your staff are important. And it doesn't always, you know, Dion, the thing I've learned, it doesn't always have to be the staff members you think. It could be an analyst. They've just sort of, you know, connected with an analyst. It could be conditioning coach. It could be the masseur. It could be anyone. But the idea is, give them the best chance to perform and to get the best from themselves, let alone for me. And if they inevitably find a way where they don't want to do that, then we have to shake hands and off they go. But it's very rare I fall out with them. You know, we just go, look, if it's not for you, no problem. I'll help you on your way. I'm certainly not one to obstruct careers if I can help it. I've never had that one. I must say, though, Dan, I've never had that one who's been really, really bad. You know, I must say, whether or not I've been fortunate or what, or maybe we set the environment where they reel it in, I've never had the one that's been really bad. I must say, I've had a few wild cards, but never one that's been destructive, let's say.
I tell you what was a nice situation for me is when I came to the training ground and you were showing me around the training ground and I was stood by the side of you. I think there was a 23s game on that day and we walked over to watch the game and stuff and walked through the gym. And as we were walking through the gym, it was very odd because I was walking with the manager of the football club through the gym and everybody else, they were all kids in there and they kind of stood to attention like the headmaster's come through. For me, that's the effect a manager should have. And it was a respect kind. It wasn't a fear. It was like a respect, manager, I boss. It was great to see. And it's something that you've earned. You have to earn that, Dyche, don't you?
Yeah, another thing that people... Probably people think they go into a job or a club or whatever and they're immediately going to be accepted for every reason because they've got the tag of the manager. I think you earn that without a doubt. You know, the people I always go to are the people who, you know, work in the kitchens, the people who work in the, you know, the laundry, the people who, because they're the people that make the wheels turn. The chef is really important. Yeah. The chef is really, really important in a football club.
What's his food like? Any good?
Top drawer, best soups in the country, without a shadow of a doubt.
You wait till he hears this. When he hears this, Dyche, he'll want to rise when he hears this.
Everyone always wants to rise. Don't worry about it. That's another part of management. Everyone always thinks their worth is more than everyone else's worth. That's another part of management, including my own, of course. But chefs are important. The coaches are important. The good thing, Dion, it's like I learned this from a friend of mine who's a restaurateur. He went through the whole business doing every job, and he said, because that's the only way I can actually understand how it's going to be successful. Well, fortunately for me, I went in at under 18 level. I know that's not like the little, you know, like end 11s, but I worked at the Harefield School at Watford then. So I worked right the way down to the under 12 age groups. My point is, I was driving the bus. I was doing the education. You know, I was in at Watford 7 o'clock, the wrong side of Watford, to drive back to the training ground the wrong way, if you like, pick up the kids along the way, do the education, get them back on the coach, go down, drop them off, go to Harefield School, do 2 hour session there, go to the first team game, do the first team game, make sure the jobs were done, because at Watford they did clean boots, and then get back at midnight. So I've earned my spurs, let's say. I know some of the demands of what's asked of them, and I know sometimes it's not always fair. And I wasn't getting paid a lot of money, but do you know what? I absolutely loved it. I mean, hard on family, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's hard to preach about something or tell somebody, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. Yes, you can do this. If you haven't been there yourself and experienced it, you know, because they can quite easily say, I can't. And if you say you can, well, you can only say you can if you've done it yourself, Darcy. And you've obviously ticked off a lot of boxes on the way up to getting where you are.
Yeah, and I'm pleased with that. I mean, I wouldn't change it. You know, I'm pleased with the boxes that I had to tick. I'm pleased with the, you know, the grind and the hours and the shift and some of the challenges you've had with players along the way, because that's how you form yourself, and that's how you form whether you think you're on the right track or not. And by the way, if you notice, this often happens. A lot of what we're talking about, we've not really spoken about 4-4-2 and 4-3-3. This is the underbelly of management. This is the reality of it, because people think, you know, you just judged on whether you play 4-3-3 or 4-4-2. They don't see all this stuff. You know what I mean? This is the myriad of different things that you have to, I think, take seriously in your job. You know, if you don't get this bit right, in my opinion, this is the base you work from. If this is wrong, you can play whatever system you want. It ain't going to pay you back, I don't think. You know, you're based from what you work on, the workforce. What are they thinking? Are their noses all pointing in the right direction? Because that's really important, I think.
Nah, me too, mate. Now, this is a question that we always get, you know, the punters that are listening always say, who was the hardest player Dargie played against? Who was the easiest player Dargie played against? And they're the two questions I'm going to ask you right now, sir.
I think the best player I played against, you'll understand why, was Juninho in his prime in the semi-finals. Because when we played Middlesbrough for Chesterfield, we put Mark Jules on him, right? Mark Jules was like meant to do a man-to-man. Mark Jules was quick and he was nimble and he was agile and he was fit. I thought they were going to have to stretch Mark Jules off the pitch. I'm telling you, Juninho, he ran and ran and ran. And then when he finished running, I think he went for a 12-minute run after the game. You know what I mean? I remember thinking, oh my goodness, this guy's unbelievable. And he could play as well. He's popping in the pocket and he was getting it off the back four and he was dribbling down through the pitch. You know, you think, oh my goodness, who is this guy? So he's definitely the best player. The hardest as in hard men. There were so many in my era, you know, all the famous stories of Billy Whitehurst and all these guys, but real proper tough men, you know. So I really missed that era. Mine were, I thought they were pretty fair. You know, you'd get knocked around a bit. You'd get knocked, you know. I've got more scars than most people, I can assure you. As one of the Millwall fans, Tommy Dion, never worry about the people with the scars, worry about the people who haven't got scars. So I said, well, I couldn't have been that tough because I've got scars everywhere around my eyes. So I weren't doing it right, let's say. So most difficult and the best player was Juninho, I thought. But again, hard player, they come in, as you know, Dion, you've been a centre forward. They come in so many guys in centre forward, you know, big, strong, awkward,
they do.
Movement, you know, so many. But he was the most outstanding individual. Easiest, I've never had an easy game. I don't believe in easy football. I've never thought football was easy. So there's no easiest. I think it's always just tough or tougher.
Yeah, you don't allow the game to be easy, do you? You always demand of yourself to make sure that your standards are high.
Absolutely, yeah, that's the key. Even pre-season, you might be playing a team that deep down, you know, they're not as good as you, or a player is not as good as you, but get yourself right. Don't worry about what they're doing. You know, you be right yourself. So that was certainly one of the things I did learn from being a player. Never take it for granted.
You know what, Dutch? I used to find, and we touched on it early on, and I know we flitted about, and I do like to flit about because, you know, I want to chat to my mates and find out what they think about football at the moment. But I found one of the most difficult things when I was a player is playing in the reserves. You know, as a senior, even at 30, 32... On the odd occasion, I might get dropped.
I always say that to lads. I say, well, the rare time when I was left out.
And you're playing the reserves, and you're the only senior who's playing in the reserves, and you've got all these 19 and 20-year-old kids running about. If you have a bad game, and your attitude's not very good, then you've lost their respect. So I suppose, you know, you mentioned the reserves, didn't you, in the 23s and how it mans you up.
I think it does in a professional way, definitely. I think you either sink or swim. You're either one of them pros who ends up somehow dropping in them big-time comments about what you've got and all that. And deep down, you know, the staff are listening thinking, you're that word that I'm thinking, you're one of them.
Yes. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I thought you, mate. And the idea of that being that when you see the ones who conduct themselves professionally, you have actually more respect. And guess what? The young players have way more respect for you because you think, not you personally or me personally, but some players think they want to hear this, yeah, I've got three cars and all this weird nonsense. But you know what they really want? They want to see you in action and play alongside you. That's what they really want.
Correct.
When you display that professional attitude, the coaches are all over you because they go, fantastic. The manager will ask, how did, say, Dion do? And the coach will say, absolutely superb in front of the young players. The young players held you in the highest regard you could ever be held in. The players that get it wrong, which you know and I know, are the ones who think they bowl in and got their cans on and, you know, I don't know, answering back to the coach and they're not training or not playing right, you know. And they've got it so far removed from the truth. But that's sometimes the ego in football rather than the professional ego. You know, you always need a version of an ego, but when it's professional ego, you turn into that super pro when everyone admires you. When you let the ego get in front of the profession, you turn into someone deep down that all the players are going, by the way, what a he was, you know, and you lose respect, as you say. But yes, some players have it naturally. I think you did, Dion. I'm not just saying.
Thank you, mate.
I think I did.
So as a long-standing manager now, one of the longest-standing managers now, what's next for yourself? What's next for the club?
Well,
where do you expect your football club to be finishing this season?
Well, in reverse order, really. Where do I end? I've always been open-minded about football because I don't believe you can plan out, particularly management. You need certain things to align to get to where you want to get to. I don't think you can just literally start off as a coach and say, in 20 years' time, I'm going to have managed three out of the top six in any European top league, and I'm going to be an international manager. I think it's a very, very difficult job to just lay that down and go, that's going to be the pathway. So therefore, I'm quite open-minded about where I go and what comes next and all that. Going back to the immediacy, obviously, to turn around a situation, we had a tough start, we've got to win games. And the middle ground is, you know, deep down, you have to find a form of enjoyment, Dion. It's a tough job at times to enjoy what we know as literal enjoyment. But you have to find a way of even enjoying the hardships. And I do, and I don't just mean winning or losing a game. I mean, you know, the media can be difficult sometimes. Your ownership can be difficult sometimes. The M6 can be difficult situation and the M1. So, but you've got to sort of, even on them dark days when you think, oh, really? You just got to dig in. You just got to dig in and learn to love it and love the hardship of it. And realistically, know that it's not going to be there forever. I do. I don't want to be a manager forever. I've got a real thirst and desire for it now. I don't think I answered this today, actually. They were saying about Roy Hodgson, class man that he is, you know, 72, whatever he is, still going. That's not for me. That's definitely not for me. I know that. I want to go hard. I want to give it my lot. And then there'll come a time when I just go, boom. And I did that on my playing career. When I finished, I've never played a game of football, but I have never played a single game of football. Get on this. This will make you laugh, right? My last ever game for Northampton Town, away at Blackpool, lost 4-1. I gave away a penalty. And scored an own goal. And before the game, I said to my missus, I know that I'm done. And I still had to play. And I knew it. And then that happened.
Before the game, I knew because
you know yourself, Dion, right? I've travelled there and everything. And deep down, I thought, I don't even want to play. And it was hideous. And I said to my missus that night, I went, forget about what's just happened. I knew it before and I'm done. And I've never played a single game of football since then. Not because I don't love the game, it's just because I played to win, I played to compete. And now I'm not going to go and compete, with all due respect, in some friendly game. It just doesn't interest me. And my body won't take it anymore. My back's knackered, my toes are knackered, I've got arthritic toes and all sorts. So I've never played that game since then. Never played a single game of football since that day.
Wow, that's good going, by the way, because you'd have been asked a few times, I would imagine.
Yeah, I've been asked a number of times, yeah. I played the odd little staff five-a-side in the gym here when many moons ago, about 6 or 7 years ago. I never played a full-size game. And I don't have a single thirst to. And now I think that'll be my career in management. Now, my point is, I think being a manager will be the same. There'll come a day. That's it.
Correct, yes.
I'm done.
Yes.
And I've always been quite compartmentalised like that. I knew when it was time. That's me done. I think somewhere down the line in management, I'll know when it's time to go. That's me done.
Okay, last question, pal. Before I let you go, thanks for your time. This is the last question. If you were having a dinner party at home and you could invite four managers, dead or alive, to your party, who would they be and why?
I think it would have to be, I just saw the Three Kings the other day, so Bill Shankly would have to be one, because when I was a kid, I was a Liverpool fan, 70s kid, most kids were, and just a legendary figure. Uh-huh. I've heard all the stories, watched the Three Kings the other night, the documentary, and it was, you know, had some interesting points in it. I think Brian Clough, only because I played distantly under him and I knew some of what he was and loads of stories about him, and I witnessed lots of stories in the 3 years out at Forest, but I didn't know him, so I'd be intrigued to know what he was really like, you know, just sit and chat and hear his thoughts. Goodness me. I'm fortunate enough to have spent a bit of time with Sir Alex, so I know a little bit about him, but he wouldn't go far wrong if he was on your table. So I'd include him just because he's a proper legend and a top bloke as well. And probably at the current managers, maybe Mourinho. You know, for all he's knocked and that, unbelievable what he's won. Serial winner, I think. Doesn't really care for brands and that. He does what he thinks is right to win a game. So I always had a lot of admiration for that, you know, and I think just to spend a bit of time in amongst that company as well, would I? It'd be brilliant, because you just roll the grenade in, don't you? Just sit back and wait for it. Because you know they're all proper men, proper leaders. They're going to go, bang! Yes. And we soon can jump on the grenade first. Look, I'm going to save the day. No, I'm going to save the day. No, I'm going to save the day. And I just see it at the back going, go on, lads, back up. You'd be brilliant. Or just throw a contentious point in. Who was the best out of you? Boom! And off it goes. The worst thing, I wouldn't be talking. I'd just be listening.
Listen, Daichi, thank you so much for your time, pal. Honestly, you're a busy man. I know you are.
Pleasure as always, mate. Pleasure as always.
No, it's very, very much appreciated. So, listen, good luck for the rest of the season. Look after yourself, and good luck to the rest of the boys.
No, thanks. I appreciate it. Take care, mate.
Well, that's about it for this episode of Dion's Gaffer Tapes. Huge thanks to my guest this week, my old pal, Mr. Sean Deitch. It's been great chatting to you, pal. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me via my socials, and if you've liked what you've heard, please subscribe to the podcast, share it with your pals, and if you've liked it, give us a 5-star rating. Anyway, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.